Imagine standing in front of a canvas that, quite frankly, just hates you.
Yeah, an artwork that actively rejects any admiration you might have for it.
Right. I mean, it doesn't want to be beautiful.
Yeah.
It definitely doesn't want to match the sofa in some modern art gallery. And most importantly, it absolutely refuses to let you relax.
It's pure confrontation, like a visual assault designed to make the viewer squirm.
That is the perfect way to put it. It metaphorically grabs you by the collar and forces you to stare directly into the absolute last thing you ever want to look at. Welcome to a new deep dive. We're thrilled to have you with us today because, well, we're not looking at contemplative, soothing art today.
No, we have something incredibly raw on the table. It is a profound departure from our usual aesthetic comfort zones. Today, we're looking at a digital artwork titled No Silencio, which translates to No Silence, created by the artist Jairo Duque.
And what makes this so intense is that it doesn't just exist on its own as an image to be interpreted, you know, however you want. It comes paired with a written manifesto by Duque himself, titled Trastio Pintura Artistica.
Yeah, and reading it feels less like a traditional artist's statement and more like a declaration of war on the passive viewer.
Duque entirely refuses to let critics or art historians decide what he meant to say. He hands you the instruction manual for the painting, and it is a brutal, uncompromising read.
It really is.
So our mission for you today is to explore the raw motivation behind this piece. We're going to dissect exactly how its visual elements are engineered from the ground up to force discomfort onto the audience. And, you know, we really want to understand its function as a tool for modern protest.
But before we get into the mechanics of how this artwork operates, we need to pause and issue a very clear, very strict note of impartiality.
Right. This is absolutely critical context for you listening before we dive into the deep end of the source material.
The texts and manifestos we are analyzing today contain highly polarizing, highly charged political language.
The artist makes direct, explicit accusations regarding the conflict in Gaza, using severe terms like Zionist genocide. And I want to be perfectly clear to you. We are in no way taking sides.
Right. We are not endorsing, validating, or condemning these viewpoints.
Our sole objective here is impartial analysis. We are simply opening the hood of this artwork to see how the engine runs, analyzing the artist's ethical stances and his visual decisions strictly as they are presented in the original source material.
We are just the messengers of the material, trying to understand how this specific creator built his protest.
Exactly. Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the physical or whether the digital reality of how this was made. Because when you look at the raw emotion of the piece, the actual tools used to make it present this wild paradox.
The contrast between the medium and the message is honestly staggering.
Let's look at the stats. This piece was created in January 2024 in Whittier, California. And the tools. It was made on an iPad using a popular illustration app called Procreate, and the design was assisted by artificial intelligence.
And then, a mere 2 months later, in March 2024, it was exhibited at a gallery in Dubai.
It sounds incredibly sterile when you list it out like a tech spec sheet.
It sounds like a keynote presentation for a new software update.
Which brings up a major question for me. Doesn't using sterile, hypermodern digital tools, and especially letting an AI algorithm assist the process, doesn't that cheapen the political message?
How do you mean?
Well, when I think of artificial intelligence and art, I think of those super smooth, soulless, perfectly symmetrical images that flood social media. So how does an artist use that to communicate the most visceral, bleeding-edge human pain? It just feels like a massive contradiction.
Well, what's fascinating here is that the motivation wasn't born from a peaceful meditative studio session where the artist was casually playing with new tech.
Right.
Generative AI usually does create very polished, synthetic-looking images, but Duque weaponizes that technology to do the exact opposite. He uses it to generate fracture, ugliness, and chaos.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the source material tells us this was born from an absolute, undeniable moral urgency.
Like he reached a boiling point.
Exactly. He describes a state where he felt he had no other option. When you are operating from that level of sheer panic and moral outrage, you don't have the luxury of time.
You don't wait to stretch a massive physical canvas and slowly mix oil paints over weeks.
No, you grab whatever is immediately in front of you. In this case, an iPad and AI algorithms. He used the digital landscape because it allowed for the immediate, rapid execution of an idea that was just burning a hole in his conscience.
It makes me think of someone using a smartphone to film a tragedy as it happens in real time. You aren't worried about lighting or cinematic framing. The tool is just the fastest way to capture the horror before it disappears.
That's a great analogy.
And the artwork's title, No Silencio, seems like a direct reaction to what he was seeing, or rather, what he wasn't hearing on those very same digital devices.
Right. The manifesto equates the international community's silence regarding the conflict with total complicity. This artwork is fundamentally a conscious rejection of that silence. It's an attempt to break the algorithmic quiet.
So if he's moving with that kind of frantic, desperate speed on his iPad to break this silence, you'd expect the painting to look equally frantic. But we really need to understand the psychology behind this silence, because it's not just a lack of noise. Duke is protesting a profound, devastating isolation.
The artist is tapping into a very specific historical pattern of isolation that victims of human-made catastrophes experience.
And this isn't unique to one conflict.
No, it's a documented psychological cycle across various humanitarian crises. It generally unfolds in three distinct stages.
The manifesto touches on this cycle, and it starts with the initial shock, that loud, desperate cry for help when a tragedy first strikes.
That first stage is purely reactive. It's the belief that if the world just knows the reality of the violence, they will inherently want to stop it, which leads directly into the second stage, a fragile hope.
Like a waiting period.
Yeah. The victims realize the outside world has heard their cry. Cameras are there, reporters are there. So there's an expectation that intervention is coming, that humanity will prevail, and outsiders will step in to halt the injustice.
But the tragedy really sets in during that third stage, doesn't it?
Yeah.
When that hope curdles.
It is the most destructive stage of the psychological cycle. It's the deafening realization that the world sees them, the world hears them perfectly clearly, and the world consciously chooses to look away and just keep turning.
Man, just imagine that for a second. The psychological toll of making eye contact with someone who refuses to help you. It's like being trapped inside a room behind thick soundproof glass.
That is a terrifying thought.
Right. You are screaming your lungs out, waving your arms, utterly terrified. And outside that glass, the rest of the world is just casually walking by.
And maybe they even glance your way.
Yeah, they make eye contact for a split second, maybe look a little sad, but then they check their Apple Watch, pick up their iced coffee, and just keep walking. That realization that you are fully seen but completely ignored has to shatter the human psyche in a way that physical violence alone simply doesn't.
That moral silence is the exact silence Duke is trying to capture, and it dictates how he designed the central figure of the artwork.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because you would naturally expect an artwork protesting that kind of desperate agony to be loud. If you're trapped behind the soundproof glass, you're screaming. You'd expect the painting to show screaming faces, hands reaching for the sky, tears streaming down cheeks.
Those are the classic historical depictions of suffering in art. We see it in Renaissance paintings, in Goya, in Picasso's Guernica, the loud, gesticulating agony.
But when you actually look at the central figure in No Silencio, that is not what you see at all. The face dominating the canvas is completely impassive. It's frozen. It's shockingly cold.
It is a total subversion of our expectations, and there is a very deliberate psychological reason for that. In classic art, depicting suffering through loud agony, think of crying mothers or bodies twisted in pain, actually serves a psychological function for the viewer.
It gives us a release valve.
It allows you, the viewer, to feel pity. You look at the crying face in a painting, you experience a wave of empathy, you feel a sense of emotional catharsis, and then your brain allows you to move on.
You feel like a good person for having felt bad for a minute. You paid your emotional tax, so you're free to go to the gift shop.
Exactly. But Duke flatly denies you that release. This frozen, paralyzed face in the center of the artwork doesn't ask for your pity. It doesn't give you a convenient emotional exit.
It just stares back at you. It traps you. You want to feel sorry for it, but the expression is too cold to accept your pity, so you're just left sitting in your own discomfort.
It mirrors the viewer's own coldness. Think about the physical act of consuming news today. When you sit on your couch watching horrific footage on your screen, you often freeze.
Right, you just go numb.
Your nervous system overloads from the sheer scale of the horror, and as a defense mechanism, you become impassive. The face in the painting reflects that exact same paralysis back at you. It is the face of a trauma that has gone so far beyond crying that the system has just shut down entirely.
And that profound discomfort isn't just in the expression of the face. It's baked into the entire physical structure of the piece. The silence leads to this frozen face, but that face is surrounded by an overwhelming, loud destruction that just assaults the eyes.
The style borders on figurative surrealism, leaning heavily into a form of modern cubism.
Wait, for someone who isn't an art major, What does Cubism actually look like in the context of this specific painting?
So Cubism essentially shatters reality. Instead of painting a scene from one perspective, like looking through a window, the artist breaks the subject apart and reassembles it from multiple angles at once.
Oh, okay.
It abandons traditional rules of perspective. There is no clear background and foreground. Everything is compressed into a flat, chaotic plane.
So in No Silencio, the environment violently intrudes right into the human figure. You see everyday houses literally embedded into the flesh of the destroyed face. The lines of the buildings become the lines of the cheekbones.
And it's crucial to note what kind of houses these are. The artist is very specific with his visual vocabulary. These are not grand monuments. They aren't government buildings or concrete military bases.
They're just ordinary homes.
Kitchens, bedrooms, living rooms. The intimate spaces of working men, women, and children. And they are physically fused with the human flesh in the artwork's composition.
So what does this all mean? When I look at how those houses are mashed into the face, it feels like, imagine a topographic map. But instead of contour lines showing mountains and valleys and rivers, the terrain is entirely made up of human lives, daily routines, and memories.
Yes, and imagine if instead of elevation lines, those lines are a family's morning routine around a kitchen table, or a child's height marked on a doorframe.
Exactly. If you drop a bomb on that specific map, you aren't just breaking brick and mortar, you are erasing a person's entire identity. You are destroying the geography of their soul.
By blending the destroyed architecture with the human face so seamlessly, Duke is arguing that the territory and the person are one and the same. To destroy the home is to obliterate the identity. You cannot separate the Palestinian people from the physical structures of their daily lives.
And merging them like that makes the image incredibly dense. There's so much happening, so many overlapping visual elements. It's actually hard to look at for more than a few seconds.
That density is a highly intentional countermeasure. We live in an era of incredibly fast-paced, easily digestible media. We are conditioned to instantly recognize an image, process it in a fraction of a second, and swipe past it.
The endless doom scrolling.
Duke uses visual density to force you to slow down. You literally cannot just glance at this piece and understand it. Your eyes have to work to disentangle the roofs of the houses from the structure of the face, to separate the fire from the sky.
It's exhausting.
It demands a grueling level of attention, which mirrors the gravity of the subject matter. He refuses to make the tragedy easy for you to consume.
Which brings that discomfort to a whole new level when you start noticing the aggressively loud aesthetic choices. Because once you do slow down and really look, the piece just attacks your senses with color and symbolism.
It finalizes its transformation from a piece of fine art into a raw utilitarian tool of protest.
The colors, for starters. The left side of the piece is dominated by these violent retina-burning oranges and yellows. It's fire, obviously, but it's not painted to be a beautiful, warm, Rembrandt-style glow. It's meant to be actively aggressive on the eyes.
He is deliberately sacrificing pictorial beauty for sheer visual impact. It is the aesthetic of aggression. And within that blinding fire, you have these obsessive, repetitive silhouettes of falling bombs.
Just over and over, falling in a steep dive, raining down through the fractured cubist spaces.
This relentless visual violence creates a stark, heartbreaking contrast with what we see tucked into the top right corner of the piece.
The Palestinian keffiyeh.
The traditional black and white checkered scarf. The artist paints it as a fragile piece of cloth, seemingly floating in the chaotic wind. It acts as a minimum but deeply authentic symbol of resistance.
That's a tiny bit of humanity in the chaos.
Yeah, it stands in direct visual opposition to the overwhelming heavy machinery of war depicted everywhere else in the frame.
And he doesn't leave that machinery of war anonymous either. This isn't just a generic war is bad piece of art. The manifesto explicitly targets the military-industrial complexes of the United States and Israel, and what Duke describes as their vast networks of corruption. He is literally pointing fingers at specific modern governments.
He is naming names, and he is using his digital canvas as a platform to do it.
Wait, I have to play devil's advocate here for a second. He's just pointing fingers, naming specific politicians and military groups, and completely abandoning any kind of artistic subtlety. Doesn't this stop being art and just become, well, a political flyer?
A reactive piece of propaganda.
Yeah. Doesn't he lose the timelessness of a masterpiece by anchoring it so hard to today's news?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that is a risk Duke is highly aware of, and he completely embraces it.
He genuinely doesn't care if it's timeless.
He believes that when bombs are falling, subtlety is a luxury of the comfortable. A beautiful abstract poem about the nature of smoke doesn't help anyone when the house is actively burning down with people inside.
You just have to scream fire as loudly as you can.
He purposefully sacrifices classical aesthetic timelessness. He is not trying to paint something that will hang quietly in a museum 300 years from now as an example of ballast composition. He is prioritizing an immediate, uncomfortable, and uncompromising roar of a testimony today.
The death of subtlety. It's a conscious choice to be blunt because the reality on the ground is blunt.
He views it as a moral obligation. The manifesto makes this abundantly clear. When war is normalized in our media, when the loss of human life is reduced to a sanitized rolling statistic at the bottom of a 24-hour news broadcast, art cannot afford to be subtle or comforting.
Art has to be the thing that loudly says no.
It must shatter that complicit silence, regardless of how uncomfortable it makes the viewer. In fact, making the viewer deeply uncomfortable is the primary metric of success for this piece. If you feel uneasy looking at it, the art is working perfectly.
Which is such a profound challenge to us, the audience. I want you, listening to this right now, to think about your own habits. Think about how often you scroll past tragedy on your own screens.
It happens all the time.
How quickly a horrific image just becomes another piece of content in your feed, sandwiched between a recipe video and a meme. Duke's No Silencio is an attempt to build a massive speed bump in that feed or brick wall you crash into that forces you to stop, stare at that cold, impassive face, and actually feel the weight of what you're seeing.
It demands that you do not look away. It strips away all the aesthetic pleasure we normally expect from art and replaces it entirely with raw accountability.
And that leaves us with a massive question, something for you to mull over after this deep dive ends. We talked about how Duke doesn't care about timelessness, but history is still going to happen. The years will pass.
It raises a fascinating question about the life cycle of protest art.
If the primary purpose of an artwork like this becomes forcing discomfort, acting as this raw, bleeding document of immediate protest, and heavily relying on artificial intelligence and digital tools to scream at the present moment, well, how will art historians and museums evaluate it decades from now?
When the immediate fire of the current conflict has passed into the history books and the 24-hour news cycle has moved on to a completely different era.
Will that frozen, impassive face maintain its raw, terrifying power without the context of today's headlines to back it up? Or will it lose its voice when it's no longer shouting alongside the present moment? Will the soundproof glass finally seal it away for good? We'll leave you to think about that canvas staring back at you. Thank you for joining us on this intense deep dive.
Thank you for listening and for sitting with the discomfort.
See you next time.